Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton, the only podcast where both co-hosts are constantly in superimposition. I am Travis, that's Kyle over there, and today we are going to talk about the Bears part of the draft. We wrapped up the entire first round, Kyle, gave our impressions about what we did in the live stream on draft night. We're just going to talk about the Bears.
I'm so sad that I fucked. I think it was me. I blame me. I overworked this poor computer and this poor Iowa internet. I'm still so sad that we lost the live recording because there was some really good stuff in there. But yeah, no, it's time to talk about the Bears draft specifically. Their smallest draft in terms of picks so far in the polls era. But obviously, yeah.
Is it all killer, no filler here, Kyle?
I think that's a good way to put it. It was all about the blue chippers, baby. And that's, I mean, if you're the Bears, that's obviously, we're going to talk about Kieran. I believe it's Omega G. Does that match up with what you?
Omagaji.
Okay. Omagaji. See, I'm so bad at pronouncing everything. Okay. Omagaji. I like it. I can do that. Omagaji. Like, oh my God, G. Like, that's what I'm going to say when he pancakes some Packers defensive end. I'm going to be like, oh my God, G. So, Omagaji, and we'll talk about, obviously, the Crocodile Punter. Those guys, you know, we'll talk about those picks. But, obviously, for the Bears, whatever happens with those two guys, this draft's going to come down 100% to whatever Caleb Williams does, and then also whatever Rome Odunze does. Those are the blue chippers. Polls, you know, I think a good chunk of this episode is going to be talking about Ryan Poles. And I think we've got three off seasons now. I'm starting to see some patterns with how Ryan Poles approaches the draft and how I'm thinking of that. What about you, Travis? Are you starting to get a sense of who Ryan Poles is? And if you have a sense for who Ryan Poles is, do you feel like you trust him more or less now than you did entering this draft?
I mean, I think one of the things that we've learned here is for the past couple of years, we've been talking about what we think Ryan Poles' plan probably is, right? How to build a team when your team has nothing left. And then, you know, 2 years ago, 1 year ago, like, okay, now we've built up, you know, X, Y, and Z. He's trying to figure out Justin, right? And then into this year, it seems like he's built, sort of a Death Star everywhere if Caleb Williams works out. I do think I'm getting a sense of who he is. It's just harder to pin that down because he doesn't have like a type, you know, like a normal Bears GM is like, this is the thing that I'm just going to fucking do. And you're going to deal with it, right? Like the mid-round safety, I'm going to ignore offense. I only want the athletic guys, right? If you're Emery. Doesn't feel that way with Poles. It feels like Poles very much gets a good snapshot of where his team is and then plays into the year.
My biggest fear about Ryan Poles for a while there was that he was too spreadsheet brained. He was too process brained. That he was always going to do certain things based on the dogma. Because, I mean, you and I are both, I mean, definitely me more than you to an extent, but like we're both analytics guys. We are both very much, you know, we came of age in the Moneyball era, the sabermetrics revolution era. You know, we are very much like, you know, good process over outcomes. That's what we try to judge things by very much, you know? And so we sympathize. We want Ryan, we want a GM who has a big picture, but you also don't want a guy who is too rigid, who is always like, this is what my dollar amount says X free agent is worth. And I will never go past it. And you don't want a guy who's saying it's always better to trade down than trade up. It's never worth trading up. You want a guy who can do all things in moderation, who can take a long view and a short view, who can really understand both the strength of the current acquisition cycle. Like, what are the players that are out there and what is smart to do? What does the future acquisition cycle look like? And you want a guy who can pick. And I think, you know, for 2 years, it was kind of hard to get the full picture because the Bears were very clearly in. First, they were in teardown. And then last year was very much a year one of a rebuild approach. You could really tell there was an emphasis just on getting a lot of picks in, getting a lot of building blocks, you know, getting just it was a lot of quantity over quality those first two drafts. He really wanted to just try to like rebuild this roster first. But we both agreed that this was the time now. Like, there are very few obvious holes entering this offseason on this roster. It was the time to swing for the fences at a couple spots and really get yourself some stars. And obviously, Caleb Williams, you know, the first time that he understood that was that, you know, he did not keep Justin Fields, because there was an argument, even some analytics guys made it, that like you should keep Justin Fields and you should trade that pick, because the odds that Caleb Williams busts, you know, you got to trade that pick and you get that haul and think of all that that's going to let you do. So there was always a slight fear that maybe he would fall for that trick too, because I mean, the haul that they could have gotten for Caleb would have been impressive, no doubt about that. And I think some GMs who worship just having more picks, who worship the spreadsheet, might have fallen into that trap. He did not. So that was the first sign. But the second sign that he cares about this too is that like he had limited powder this year to go after, you know, to go after certain targets. I think they had limited cash. I think, you know, this was not the year that they could really go all in splurging in free agency. So I think he was very smart about like, all right, well, the resources I do have, we're going to take Caleb Williams. So then the next goal, the most important goal of the 2024 Bears, is going to be developing Caleb Williams. So besides a pre-free agency signing of Kevin Byard, they really have not poured a lot of resources into this defense this offseason, which is good. It's also understanding what you did the last couple off seasons, where I think the majority of the resources did go into defense. But I think, again, now that we have a longer-ish view, I think we were all afraid that that emphasis on defense was very much just the Bears being the Bears again. They hired another guy who thinks you win with defense. But with the 9th overall pick and what they did with that, I think we're starting to see that, like, no, Poles took defense at this spot and this spot and this spot because he felt that was the best player on the board at that time. And they wanted to have the fundamentals of this defense in place because that was what was available. And then they were going to wait to strike on offense until they had the right guys in the right spots. And so now you have a Caleb Williams. Now you're at number 9 and you can get that blue chip wide receiver instead of forcing a pick, you know, in the late second round on like an Alec Pierce or whatever have you. You need wide receiver. But yeah, I've rambled on too long, but yes, I think we're starting. I'm not falling into the King Poles thing. I don't do blind GM worship, but I think we're starting to get a better picture of Ryan Poles, how he operates, how flexible he can actually be, and do.
Yeah, I sort of disagree there, in that I don't think the Rome Odunze pick is like now I'm going to support Caleb with this wide receiver, although I think that certainly helps. I think we're at the point just with the Bears where we can honestly go into a draft and say, well, if the best player available is just sitting right there, regardless of need, because quite frankly, the Bears did not need another wide receiver. He could just say, yeah, we're going to take this. We're going to load up. We're going to support a position of strength on this team. Now we don't need to retain Keenan Allen after the season. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. We just want to be stacked, right? We want to take the best guy on the board. And that was definitely Rome Odunze at that spot. And to see a guy who can adjust like that, because last year we were definitely not in a position where we could ignore need, right? He targeted Darnell Wright and then specifically traded down to just get more value and still get his guy. He wasn't focused on getting best player available at his spot, which was obviously Jalen Carter. He was focused on getting as much value as he could while still getting the dude he needed, which was Darnell Wright. The same thing with the interior defensive line. We needed defensive tackles. We needed Jervon and Zach Pickens to try to work out. We needed another corner like Tyreek Stevenson. It really felt like a shopping list, right? Like, we need this, we need this, we need this. And they went through the draft and got those things. It feels a lot like this year he was saying, who's the best motherfucker at this spot, right? Well, obviously, we need a quarterback. That was the one thing. But after that, it was really like, who's the dude? And I think that's what they did with Odunze.
Well,
I think that's what they did with Amagaji. I don't think we didn't need a swing tackle, right? We already signed a swing tackle, but this is a guy they liked. This is the guy who was the highest on their board. And then Torrey Taylor. Again, we're going to talk about Torrey. But just we don't need a punter, right? You never need a punter, but I bet he was the highest guy on their board at that point because he really is a game changer at that position.
Yeah, I think you can definitely.
It's that change that I'm most impressed with polls to go from draft to draft and really look at your team, honestly.
Yeah, I guess I didn't mean to say that this year's draft wasn't like a BPA draft at all. It was, but it was, like I said, we have seen him. And I think, no, what I was saying more, that first draft, 2022, I felt like that was very much a BPA draft. And then last year was more like, all right, we got to fill out the bones of this roster still. And like you said, yeah, I agree with the shopping. Yeah. And then this year, again, a pivot to, and I think Roma Dunze was both the BPA, but I don't think it was strictly BPA. I think that was understanding that, like, yes, we have Keenan Allen.
I think it's a lot, right? It was the best pick for every reason.
We have
reason.
Keenan Allen in place right now, but we need to think long term. And also, like, getting a Roma Dunze on the roster while you still have Keenan Allen is the best thing for Caleb. It's the best thing for Rome too, because Rome now gets to develop in that situation where there's not a ton of burden of expectation on him, which is great. And then he's ready to take over full time as your number one or number two wide receiver next year, which is fantastic. But I also think, again, I think it's understanding each respective acquisition cycle, because if you want to look at next year's draft, the strength of next year's draft is in the defensive line depth. Nate Tice put Absolutely. Out a preliminary top 25 list for 2025. And I want to say like 18 or 19 of the 25 were defensive players, and the majority of those were in the trenches. So, you know, you love JT Tuimalu. I know you love him. You love him so much.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking around and it's early, and it's so much can change between now and the draft next year, obviously. But you know, there's a vibe that this guy might be DE3, DE4, which could be in the range where the Bears are looking next year, for sure. You never know.
Right.
But yeah, I think he's saying that, like, look, not only is Rome the BPA, for sure, but this is the draft to get your wide receiver. And if the missing piece that we have next year is still just, we need that complimentary pass rusher, we still need that second edge or interior pass rusher next to Montez Sweat, next year's draft, that acquisition cycle is the better place to do it. So he's really not locking himself into one draft at a time. And I do appreciate. Now, it'll be interesting to see. There's still one more evolution left in this process, because, you know, they got one more year where they're not going to be expected to win. Now, I think a lot of people are expecting them to do some pretty cool shit this year. They're going to need to show some stuff. They're going to want Caleb to go off. But, you know, best case scenario, you have the year that the Texans and CJ Stroud just had. But if nothing else, I think we're all hoping, you know, for like 8 wins, Caleb looking really promising, the defense coming together, and you get the feeling that, like, all right, 2025, all fucking in. And so then next year you'll see, you know, what is Poles willing to package some picks and make a swing up for a guy that he deems as the missing piece? Is he willing to lay it all on the table in free agency? You know, so we still have to see how he operates in that, when that mindset, that's the last evolution of this process. But yeah, I mean, for me, taking Roma Dunze, when again, you could very much have process brained your way into thinking like the smart move here is to trade down from 9, get another pick. There's so much wide receiver depth in this class, and we already have Keenan Allen, DJ Moore. It's not like we need a star wide receiver. Let's just trade down, get ourselves a Byron Murphy, because the way this draft is trending, he's going to be there at pick 14 or 15, which he would have been. And then we can get Roman Wilson later, and we can do this, and we can kind of continue just to patch the holes. We can keep using the shopping list, like you said. But it says a lot to me that he didn't do that, that he was like, nope, this roster may not be perfect, but it's mostly filled out. The only thing we're lacking is star power still. And that guy right there is a star.
Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely agree. Like, I was super heartened by what he did, mostly because he just seems so malleable as a GM. The only thing I think that we can expect every year is like some activity at the trade deadline. He seems pretty consistent there. He's always looking for dudes. But beyond that, it seems like he just does a good job of taking a real honest look at the team.
I'm really happy we got through this draft with that Panthers second round pick in hand. Because for two reasons. One, if nothing happens next year, fine. You have your own second round pick and you have a Panthers second round pick that I'm still quite sure is going to be a top 40 pick. Those are lots of things you can package up for a draft day move next year. Or, you know, we have seen this in the NFL the last couple of years. Teams fall out of contention, and right there at the trade deadline, there's an edge rusher on an expiring contract who, you know, whether it's a Bradley Chubb or whether it's a Montez Sweat, you know, there's going to be a dude available almost certainly at the trade deadline this year. And if you've kept your second and the Panthers second, you know, that's a hell of a bargaining chip. I mean, if there's, you know, if there's a pass rusher on the market who you see as a guy that you can extend and be part of your core, and you want to give up that second round for him, you've got a second round that's probably going to be better than any other that anyone else is going to put on the table in that offer. So I'm really glad he managed to hold on to that chip. And I really don't mind, you know, obviously it failed miserably with Claypool. So you really got to scrutinize who you're giving this pick up for. But I actually understand the logic of using a second round pick to jump the market and get exclusive rights, exclusive negotiation rights with a free agent at a premium position. It worked beautifully with Montez Sweat. I don't regret giving up the 40th overall pick for him at all. So being in position to do that again, if you need to, I don't know that you want to make a habit of doing that every single year, but it, you know, if you're one piece away and that missing piece, that ready to go, already still in his prime, just looking for his second contract, NFL pass rushers right there at the deadline, it's pretty good that you still have that in your pocket.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if the Bears are 5-4, 6-3 at that point or something, and you know, they're staring down, another edge rusher or whatever it may be that the Bears need. We don't really, you know, we can't say. It'd be nice to be able to trade that second round pick for a third year in a row, but still have a second round pick in the draft. Even though, honestly, in this upcoming draft, like we said, this is not a great draft. It's a great draft for one position and everything else. It's pretty so-so. So if you're going to trade a second round pick, this is really the draft to do it in. I guess that covers Ryan Poles. Do we have anything more to say about Caleb Williams? Should we just celebrate here a bit? Or
yeah, I mean, I feel like we've almost done Caleb a disservice because, you know, the one episode we did do, it ended very positively. I talked about why I became convinced Caleb Williams is the guy. But a lot of it was scrutinizing Caleb. And then we really haven't talked about Caleb so much because, you know, that was always the duh. Like that part that was getting, you know, for some people on Bears Twitter, it wasn't a duh. They needed to be smacked upside the head with the reality of that move happening, you know, I guess. But still, it's, what's the thing that you are most excited for about Caleb Williams and the things you've watched? What sold you on Caleb Williams, Travis?
Probably the anticipation, and I'm saying that because obviously we've dealt with Justin Fields, who had supreme talent, but just never really had the ability to anticipate a throw and didn't really grow into it either. So to see a guy coming into here who has clearly demonstrated the ability to anticipate, and maybe most importantly, the ability to analyze a play pre-snap, which is supremely important in today's NFL, and is probably the number one thing that guys are looking at coming out of college, looking at for quarterbacks, is the ability to tell what's going on to play before the ball is snapped. And Caleb nails those two boxes. I mean, he has the physical talent, obviously, but in the NFL right now, physical talent is almost secondary. What you really need is that ability to read a defense before the play, adjust if there was a disguised coverage, and then throw the ball to the right spot. Caleb absolutely demonstrated that last year. And also, I mean, you could see from 2022 to 2023, Caleb developing from a guy who, you know, really wanted to play, I guess for lack of a better term, hero ball a lot because he had more time. He had time in the pocket to do it. And last year, he was really forced to think about what he was doing because of his bad offensive line. Because of the pieces around him being so untalented compared to what USC usually has.
Yeah, well, Ryan Poles.
And to see him this year kind of turn into a guy who's like, I'm going to wield my anticipation way more this year than I did last year. that's something that was really
Ryan Poles specifically cited the Notre Dame game. Like, they felt that that was a good thing in their eyes because they saw that he was challenged and they wanted to see how he responded to that. And I actually felt the same way because I thought that after the Notre, for as much as that Notre Dame game freaked people out, I thought, first of all, in the second half of that game, he was really good. And then I thought that he really responded to that game down the stretch by realizing he can't play like that anymore. And I think people didn't notice that because USC kept fucking losing, which was not his fault. Again, this is a guy who I think, what did I say the record? What he was 14-0 or something at USC when they gave up less than 35 points. In the games that he lost at USC, they gave up an average of 43 points per game. But like after the Notre Dame game, you see him really put an emphasis on trying to stay within structure, make plays within structure, hitting his check down, not passing up those layups. He really seemed like he just understood and took to heart the lessons of that Notre Dame game, that Marcus Freeman really built a game plan meant to kind of take advantage of what Caleb does and how Caleb presses sometimes. And Caleb responded to that. I thought his best pro quarterback, pro style quarterbacking, his best, most projectable tape happened after that Notre Dame game. And it was very encouraging. So that's part of what sold me. I think what sold me on Caleb just in general, obviously, I mean, the data work I did and everything like that, but like really, again, if you just take the long, if you just watch Caleb Williams from a distance, watch the broadcast view, et cetera, you really get the, you can understand why some people are, you know, some haters out there are like, oh, he's just Zach Wilson. He's just running around out there. But like when you really sit down and take the time to look at it on a down by down basis and just look at the film, look where the safeties are and realize how much the out of structure stuff was forced on him. And like, and then you realize how much of a strength it is. And again, it's the Mahomes. It's wanting to be Patrick Mahomes versus or Aaron Rodgers versus wanting to be Justin Fields, where you like, because Jaden Daniels is a guy that I think is much more like a Justin Fields, where like he's reliant on the scrambling, reliant because doesn't have answers when things get messy. Just relies, instinct takes over, just relies on his legs. Not a lot of calm there. Caleb, it's so much he does not want to scramble, but when you force him to, by God, he will buy time and he'll break your back. It's the true creativity within and outside the pocket at finding the right throw to make, changing the arm angles, but only doing it when forced to do it. The clean pocket scramble rates is super encouraging. He really is not the guy that he looks like at first glance. And then when you realize how much he can operate within structure when there is structure, then the creation stuff becomes such a weapon. And that's been the whole, we talked about this with Zach Wilson, that was the whole misinterpretation of what Patrick Mahomes is. And Patrick Mahomes led to Zach Wilson, where people focused way too much on the highlights and the what the out of structure plays looked like and not to how the quarterback arrived to that out of structure playmaking decision. And Caleb, it's just so much easier to like, when you really look at him, just to realize that like, he's not doing this because he wants to, he's doing it because he can. And the fact that he can, but only does it when he has to, is what makes him exciting and more translatable as an NFL prospect than some of these guys.
Yeah, that's definitely the crucial bit. It's when are you deciding to make the Pat Mahomes play? Because yeah, I mean, I don't want to say there's a thin line between Pat Mahomes and Zach Wilson, but in that decision-making, sometimes there can be, you know, it's just maybe 15%, right? 15% of the time, am I going to hold the ball, wait for something to open up downfield by time? Am I going to run the ball? It's that line between making those decisions and not making those decisions that can really make an NFL quarterback. He has everything. He's got everything, man, like this. He has all of the ability to be in the conversation with Mahomes or Rodgers. And it's up to the Bears to bring that out of him. Now, part of that is giving him great wide receivers And obviously, we knew going into the draft that Caleb wanted Rome Odunze. He wanted him bad. We know after the draft with what Poles said and what Ian Cunningham was getting up to in the draft room, that Poles wanted Rome Odunze bad, and they ended up getting him because the Falcons are insane. I mean, Kyle, you were kind of reserved. You were a little reserved on Odunze when we talked about the wide receivers. And I say that people might go back and be like, are you sure he was being reserved? I assure you folks that he was. Now that he's a Bear, do you want to let it out? Like, do you just want to spread your wings?
I literally said, like, I could not let myself watch too much Rome Odunze tape. Like, I watched just enough to talk about the episode, and I looked just enough numbers to speak to him in the episode, and then I cut myself off. Because I was like, if he's not there at 9, or if he's there at 9 and they don't take him, I will be devastated enough to begin with. And now that he is a Bear, I am just going whole hog. I am scar-facing into a pile of Rome Odunze highlights stacked up on my table. This guy's Larry fucking Fitzgerald. He is. That's the guy I see. I've seen some Davante Adams comps, which would, you know, that'd be all right, I guess. But, like, he is just the size, the speed, the fluidity. I think it's so funny. You get some people who still act like he can't separate, which is insane to me. He's a fantastic separator. I think it's just people notice how many contested catch opportunities he gets and how fucking incredible he is at converting those. Like, is it 75% contested catch rate this year? Nuts. Absolutely bananas. That I think it blinds him to how many times he gets other catches too that aren't contested at all because he's wide ass open. It's just that guess what, guys? He can do it all. He can do it all. I heard multiple people say that they felt in a lot of ways that Rome Odunze was the second cleanest prospect in this draft, where you felt the best just turning in the card, because, you know, Malik Nabers might have higher upside, but there's questions with Malik Nabers. You know, he's not the biggest dude, and there's, you know, off-field stuff, which I don't get into any of that. You know, we don't like to get into that shit. But there is that with Nabers. You know, Marvin Harrison Jr., I assume, was the number one cleanest prospect that they were talking about in there. So I don't know if people quit with Marcus with Marvin Harrison Jr. there. But, like, Rome Odunze is just, he's so smooth. That's, I mean, smooth. Smooth. The route running is so clean. The technique is so clean. The hands are so clean. I mean, this guy is, you never know. And the wide receiver bust rate in the first round, it is what it is. You know, obviously there's no sure things at this position. But I mean, when you look at guys similar to him, just from a data profile, you know, Matt Harmon does reception perception for Yahoo Sports. He's incredible. And he likes to do these color-coded route trees where he charts every wide receiver and all the routes they run. And then compares those guys to each other and determines what's considered a good success rate on each route. And then he color codes this route tree, you know, and if your guy is green, that means he's significantly above average, in terms of success rate at that particular route. If he's got a yellow route, that means, you know, he's average, in the average range on there. If it's orange or red, you know, that means the guy's obviously bad at running those. So you'll see, you know, you'll see some guys who have, you know, like three green route trees, especially in college, where it's like, you know, nine ball vertical, they'll do that. Deep post, they'll do that. Slant, they'll do that. And then they'll be average or less at everything else. Rome Odunze is one of the only guys I've ever seen the entire tree is green. Every single one of them. If you want him to run slants, he'll run slants. You want him to run hooks, he'll run hooks. You want to run him on a dig, on a crossing route, over the middle, boom, 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 he's got it. You want him to carry the ball upfield, he's one of the best deep threats in college football history. He can do all of it. There's nothing. Of course, things could go wrong. He could get hurt. There could be, but like, there's nothing looking at this guy that I can even look at and tell you that if it does go wrong, other than injuries, I couldn't tell you what the fuck happened, because he is a perfect wide receiver prospect. Perfect.
Yeah, I think the separation thing comes from just watching tape of him, probably alongside tape of MHJ and Nabers, right? Because those two guys are maybe get the most separation of any college wide receivers I've ever seen. Like, Nabers was routinely 5 yards open if he was running a go route. Like, Marvin Harrison Jr., like, you want to talk about smooth. I don't know how he was as open as he always was. Rome is always a step ahead of the guy who is on him. Like, it's not going to be 4 yards of separation, right? Like you might see from neighbors or something, but he's ahead. And the thing is, you don't need to be 4 steps ahead. You only need to be 1 step ahead when your contested catch rate is 75%. You know, when you turn every 50-50 ball into a 75-25 ball, you only need 1 step. Rome, like you said, Rome is really good at everything. I think he's the reason, I guess, we talk about him in the same breath as Larry Fitzgerald and Davante Adams are the two that I see people talk about the most, is he's a deep threat, but he's not a deep threat in the way you're thinking of like Xavier Worthy or DK Metcalf, right? He's a deep threat in that as long as he has that step and there's only one guy on him, it's just not enough. The ball is getting caught, right? Like, it's that overwhelming ability to bring the ball in that makes him this powerful deep threat. One of the things you notice when you're watching him on film is the catch that he has in his bag, it might be the best catch rate with this that I've ever seen, is the over-the-shoulder catch, which is an extremely difficult catch. And as Bears fans, you could probably already think of 5 different Bears wide receivers who just never made that goddamn catch. The ball came over their shoulders, and there's no way it's getting caught, right? Rome almost prefers this catch, and the advantages to being able to always make a catch over your shoulder are the corner never has an idea when the ball's coming in, so there's never going to be any interference, and it means you're pretty much going to catch, like I said, 75-25 of those 50-50 balls. All these passes that go downfield, they're just automatic for Rome in a way that they're not for almost any other wide receiver. It's going to be wild to watch this guy. I am interested in seeing what his role is on this team, well, I guess, this year. And it's so cool. It's so cool to have the 9th overall pick. He's so hyped. And you're like, you know what? There's also no pressure on him to perform. He's the 4th option.
Like a starting outside wide receiver for them. Because, I mean, if you look at Keenan Allen in his career, I mean, he's played inside, outside. But, like, last year he was 60-40 slot versus outside. And at this stage in his career, especially, he is best in the slot. So I think they'll run a lot of 11, which is funny because we talked about when Shane Waldron was hired, they love to run 12 personnel. And they signed Gerald Everett. So obviously 12 personnel, still a big part of their plans. But you'll see him run a lot of 11 personnel. And I don't know that he will be the primary option on as many plays. You would assume that would be DJ, or they'll want to work Keenan Allen in the slot. A lot of times I'm sure Rome will be used as a clear out, as a vertical threat, but over time, I'm guessing he'll start to see that target share go up a bit. But yeah, they're in a fantastic situation where like they are not reliant on, and that's what we said before, like when they made the Keenan Allen trade, the best thing about the Keenan Allen trade is even if they still go wide receiver, like, if they hadn't made the Keenan Allen move, even in the best case scenario where you did still get Rome Odunze, DJ Moore and Rome Odunze with not a whole lot behind them, that's still not a great plan A for a rookie quarterback, because you're one injury away from Tyler Scott as a starting wide receiver. But also, like, Rome, as awesome as Rome is, rookie wide receivers do still tend to have an adjustment period. It's usually not a great idea to pencil in one as a starter for 17 games and bank on him having a true wide receiver 1 or 2 target share. It's not good. So the ability to have Rome Odunze and not rely on that is wild. So yeah, I mean, Caleb and Rome, 2 slam dunk picks. The mood when that card was turned in for number 9 was euphoric on the live chat. I'm sad we lost that moment in history. Cause yeah, it was wild. Absolutely wild. You feel good about now the Bears having depth at wide receiver. Because, I mean, the other thing about Keenan Allen is, Keenan Allen's going to, especially at this age, he's going to miss 3 or 4 games. Pretty much always does. You don't want to be, you don't want to have Tyler Scott as your wide receiver too in those situations. And I think you and I are a little less down on Tyler Scott than a lot of Bears people were. But, man, like I said, I said all along, like, if Tyler Scott is in a competition to be your wide receiver 4 in camp, which is what he is, that's not bad. If he is your locked in wide receiver three, you got real fucking problems. So whatever Tyler Scott gets, he'll earn. But yeah, I mean, there's some real depth here. They're pretty insured now. You know, and Waldron does love 12 personnel. So I would assume in the event that, you know, Keenan Allen does miss a couple games, they'll run Rome and DJ Moore out there as their wide receivers, and they'll just run a lot of 12 personnel. You know, your slot guy is more likely to be Gerald Everett than anything in that situation, or Cole Kmet. Yep. So they're pretty covered in that contingency too. They signed DJ Swift so that they have a back that they can throw the ball to. There's a lot of options here. There's a lot of options for Caleb to get the ball out quickly too. And I'm sure that's going to be an emphasis for them early in his career. Like, they're like, all right, kid, we are going to teach you how to take the check down. All right. There are going to be options for it. You're going to be IDing and getting that ball out quickly. You're going to show us that you can do that. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing left to say at that point other than, holy shit, I'm so excited. And folks, if you have not gone Tony Montana face first into a mound of Roma Dunze highlights, get yourself to YouTube and go do that. Like, you deserve this. Be happy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty fantastic. They have surrounded Caleb Williams with such a wealth of talent offensively, both with people to get the ball out to and the people blocking for him. And then the backups to the people blocking for him. You know, we are fully set here. And before we move on to the other couple guys who we got in this draft, I do think we have to point out, man, if Poles always had this in him, CJ Stroud mentioned this. It's been talked about a bit. But man, if this was something Poles knew he should do for a young quarterback, we could kind of confirm at this point that he hung Justin out to dry a bit here, right? He was like, hey, sink or swim, kid, you're not my guy. You know, if you prove yourself with the trash that I'm giving you, that's great. But is it possible Poles just had his eye on Caleb Williams all along, or was it just this draft? But either way, to see that he could do this for the first time in Bears history, but also for the first time since he's been here, kind of RIP to Justin. You know, I'm happy for Caleb. I'm happy as a Bears fan. But man, if you're Justin Fields, you got to look at this and just be like, son of a bitch. Do you know who I was throwing to my second year? Do you know who was blocking for me my second year?
Well, CJ Stroud asked that the other day. You know, like, why couldn't they do it for Justin? And the fact is they couldn't, because they didn't have the picks. They didn't have the resources to do that. And if they had made that choice, you know, in year two, like, a lot of, this is where, you know, you and I got to eat some shit, don't we? Don't we kind of owe Ryan Poles a little bit of an apology here? Because, like, in 2022, we were like, man, you're really going to roll into the season with Dante Pettis and Velus Jones as your wide receiver. This is terrible. You're hanging the kid out to dry. We were incensed about it. And we weren't wrong.
He totally did.
They were hanging the kid out.
Right? And he did. He did that shit.
I think we were wrong that it was the wrong thing to do. Like, he obviously made a very cold, rational assessment that, like, Justin Fields probably isn't the guy. Now, I've heard whispers and rumors that Kansas City had a third-round grade on Justin Fields when he was in the draft. And obviously, Ryan Poles was in that draft room at the time. He was the head of the college scouting. So if the Chiefs had a third-round grade on Justin Fields, you can bet that Ryan Poles probably did. And so I think he made the cold, rational decision that, like, look, Justin's probably not the guy. I'm not going to waste my shot building around a guy that I don't even really believe in. If he survives all this and proves against all odds he's the dude, then we'll pivot. But that didn't happen. And at the same time, I do feel like he was fair enough to Justin that, like, he didn't eject him at the first sign of trouble and take Stroud or Bryce Young. He gave him that third year, and he gave him enough that third year. And I know Bears fans are still saying that roster wasn't good enough or whatever. And no, I'm not going to tell you it was a top 10 supporting cast last year. But you cannot tell me with a straight face that the supporting cast that Justin Fields entered week one with last year was worse than what CJ Stroud entered week one with the Houston Texans, or that Jordan Love had. Good quarterbacks, it was a good enough situation that a good quarterback would have been able to show clearly and unequivocally that he was a good quarterback. So yeah, no, I mean, Ryan Poles, I owe him that apology. Like, it was cold, it was cruel. He chose to sacrifice the career of Justin Fields in Chicago for the long-term improvement of the Bears situation as a whole, and he was right. Now, he looks really, really smart because that ended up being the Caleb Williams pick. If Carolina takes C.J. Stroud and they win a couple more games and that pick is the fourth overall pick, I don't know where we're at exactly. You know, are they taking J.J. McCarthy? Are they taking Michael Penix? Are they taking Bo Nix? Who knows? Are they just keeping Justin and taking Marvin Harrison Jr. and trying again next year if they need to in a draft where the quarterbacks are not very promising either? You know, either there's a tremendous amount of luck here. But that is all – that's not to knock Ryan Poles either, because all of these guys, it takes luck. The Chiefs famously tried to trade up for Paxton Lynch and were blocked by the Broncos. And the next year they pivoted and they took Patrick Mahomes. Like, all of these guys, it takes luck. Sometimes they are saved by the moves they don't make, even if they tried to make them. So luck plays a huge factor here too. But it still takes a good understanding of the big picture to tear down, to understand, and to pivot, and to, you know, to bet big and trade the number one overall pick and do all of those things when he did. It's they sacrificed Justin Fields.
I mean, all that's left is did it work? I can't wait for the preseason and this next season.
Caleb Williams is the guy, then, you know, won't be long before there's a Ryan Poles statue, you know? So, let's talk about the other two picks.
All right. We got three other picks. So thank Kieran, you were the one hyping Austin Booker up to me. First we've got Kieran Abagaji, offensive tackle out of Yale. I got to tell you, I was surprised to see Adisa Isaac there, and they passed on him. But this is the tricky part. Abagaji didn't have an RAS score. No RAS score for Kieran Abagaji, so I wasn't able to pull that rabbit out of the hat. This is, the number one thing to know about this guy is lifelong Bears fan. So this was a pretty big moment for him. He's one of us.
Did I send you the tweet that was like, I don't care if he's ready or not, start Kieran against the Packers. I want to see the anger of a childhood ruined, or of a ruined childhood unleashed. That made me laugh. He's one of us.
Hell yeah.
No, I was, what I want to talk about with Kieran was not even so much about him specifically. Here's what we can say about him. The tools are absurd. The size is absurd. He has all of the raw physical stuff. And I think he's got decent feet and decent hand placement already, as is too. This is Poles' gamble on trying to find his own Jordan Mailata kind of guy, you know, where it's just like, it's going to take a little work. It's a project. But what I think this pick specifically tells us, and some of the picks that Poles has continued not to make, is he doesn't really see a ton of value on those mid-round guards, I think.
I think we can cross that off the list.
If he's drafting an offensive lineman, he's drafting a guy who has tackle upside, I think, with the thinking that, like, if he doesn't work out at tackle, then we can try this guy at guard. But I don't think he is content settling with that mid-round guard candidate. It doesn't seem like that's ever going to be his move. Now, I don't know if that long-term, if that's good or not, but I think it's been three drafts, and we are seeing the pattern here. If he's taking a guy, it's going to be a Braxton Jones, or it's going to be a guy like Kieran, where it's like, look, they have the tools to be an outstanding tackle in the NFL. And I think he's thinking like, well, if we aim for outstanding tackle and we land on acceptable guard, that's still a good use of a third or fourth round pick or fifth round pick.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I agree. I think we can finally just kind of put to rest the idea that he's ever going to take an interior offensive lineman in those mid rounds.
Watch him take
interest.
He'll be like,
in that.
No, guys, I was.
I
was just waiting until I had a whole bunch of picks and no obvious needs so that I could do the oops all guards draft. So if that happens, we'll see.
That's right.
He's gonna bet on crazy tools, which we knew that about him. Everything he's ever done has been to use our good friend Nick's term that he taught us, he loves his tools goofs. He's going to bet on absurd physical tools above all else. But yeah, if he's taking a guy in the, you know, if he's taking a guy in the mid rounds, he's not settling for a Cooper. He's not going for a Cooper Beebe, who is a polished, you know, not the world's greatest athlete, but a polished, refined technician at guard already. He's saying, give me the big lunk that might someday be an elite left tackle. And if he flunks down to okay guard, fine. And maybe he's nothing, but I'm going to bet on the guy that could be a home run pick every time. So that seems to be, you know, Kieran, we'll see if he plays much this year. I do think I like the depth they have now on the offensive line. There's some good.
Oh, like have we, I mean, we're going to talk about this in the preview eventually for the Bears, but man, have we ever seen depth on the offensive line for the Bears like this? There's backups to their backups that are quality. Kyle, there's a real possibility that they're going to cut an actual good offensive line.
I think Larry Borum's in trouble. Larry Borum's gone. But they've got,
he's got to be right.
They've got Braxton Jones. They have Darnell Wright, both two tackles that we feel good about. You know, the starting depth, Tevin Jenkins, when healthy, is a fantastic guard. I am actually optimistic about Nate Davis bouncing back a little if he doesn't have the turbulent offseason and the medical issues he had last year. Like I said, I think the plan at center, they want to start Ryan Bates. They think he has upside and can be a longer-ish term center there. But they already hedged their bet there with a Coleman Shelton, which you like. And then, as we said, if you do have a guard injury, it seems like the plans very quickly, you have Ryan Bates, who's proven to be a solid backup NFL guard. They have Bates ready to go at one of those guard spots, and then you plug in Shelton at center. You have now added Kieran to the mix as a potential swing tackle. They signed a swing tackle. There is, you know, not a ton of top shelf talent, but it's they are not one injury away from disaster on the offensive line anymore, which is good because that was, you know, 2022, they didn't need an injury. They were just at disaster permanently. Last year, they were still one injury away from disaster. And I think we have finally migrated away from that. So that's exciting, too.
Yeah, very, very nice. Yeah, I like, I mean, it's kind of weird to judge a guy like Amagaji based on his tape because he played in the Ivy League. You know, he's played against the FCS competition. He completely outclassed those guys. I went back. I watched the four games he played this last year. He made them look very stupid.
All you want to see from a guy like that against competition like that is you want to see him look like a man among boys. And he did. He fucking looks like the kid from The Blind Side going up against the other high school kids in that movie. Like he's just.
Oh, yeah. It looked like he shouldn't have been there. It looked like somebody let like the tackle for LSU or something play for Yale for half a year.
You obviously want to see that. Well, and I think Ian Cunningham was part of the Philadelphia regime that did take a chance on Jordan Mailata and watched him become an elite left tackle. So I think that's what, you know, he's thinking too. He's like, you know, I've been part of that gamble before, so we're going to do it again. We're going to try it again. Should we move on? Travis, I'm going to give you the floor.
Yeah.
Talk about the punter. Talk about why it's okay that they took a punter, Travis.
Oh, man. Okay, so everybody knows I'm a Hawkeye fan, I think, at this point. I've talked about Iowa enough. So I'm intimately familiar with Torrey Taylor. Kyle, you made a joke last week. There was a tweet that said that Iowa now has USC, Washington, and Iowa's best offensive weapons from the last year. And I think they meant it to be funny. And there was no joke there. There was no word of a lie. Torrey Taylor is that good of a punter. There's a saying here in Iowa, punting is winning. This is something that Kirk Ferentz has actually said. And it has never been more true than since Iowa has had Torrey Taylor at a punter. You want to know, look at Iowa's record the last 3 years, and then remember that Iowa had either the worst or almost the worst offense in all of the NCAA. Remember that they play in the Big Ten. One of the two good leagues still left, the two Division I leagues still left in college football. And you ask yourself, how the fuck did Iowa win 10 games each of these years? Like, how does that happen? Is their defense that good? Yes, their defense was incredible, but it was Torrey Taylor. Every time Iowa would go three and out, which was constantly flipping the field and not getting a touchback. This dude, 93 punts last year, which makes me want to throw up a little bit. 93 punts, 7 touchbacks, And despite punting that many times, he's still fourth in net punt average, just for yardage, just for pure yardage for a punter. Only 7 touchbacks. The man is a coffin corner machine. I want you to, Kyle, you haven't played fantasy football for a while, but you remember Travis Kelce always goes super high in drafts, right? Do you remember why that is?
No, enlighten me.
Are you? Oh, he's muted. Do you remember, Kyle? Do you remember why Travis Kelce always goes super high? It's because of positional scarcity.
Right.
Let's say it's because if you have Travis Kelce on your team, you're guaranteeing this massive amount of points out of a position where everybody else is going to get like a little bit, or if they're like really lucky, that tight end's going to catch a touchdown, right? You're going to get a 14-point game. That you're feeling really good about that. Whereas Kelce is going to give you these wide receiver production numbers. He's going to blow the lid off that tight end position, right? Torrey Taylor does that as a punter for like Travis Kelce does for a tight end in fantasy football. This is a guy where, kind of like Javi Baez, you watch him play and you start to think about parts of the game that you never really fucking thought about before, right? Your team's punting. Okay, whatever. I don't know. Maybe it'll be a touchback or something. I'm not really hoping for anything. Every time Torrey goes onto the field, you know he's going to deal a psychological blow to the competition. If you're punting from your own 35, you're thinking, all right, man, my punter's going to catch this at the 25. Maybe he gets a couple yards. Whatever, dude, we're going to be at the 30, 25. That's fine field position. And then Torrey blasts a fucking ball that goes out of bounds inside the 10. And the other team is like, what the fuck just happened? Like, my day is ruined. You got him punting from the 50, and you know the ball is going to land at the 2 somehow and just stop. He is an absolute nightmare. He ruins the other team's day. He completely owns the position, the positional advantage in any football game that he's in. This is the only reason Iowa won games. It's because this dude exists and constantly made the other team start inside their own 10-yard line. And I no other team is going to have that advantage. I think maybe the Bills signed the punt god after he finally beat
he
that
was
case.
Not,
but
is,
that
he's
might
not
be the only
good punter. He's just he can yeah. boom punts, but like Torrey Taylor is like
it is the strength
right.
and the accuracy
the
that makes him
and
a nightmare
to just drop it and pin it inside the 5 over and over and over and over. I still think a 4th-round pick is a little rich for a punter, but it's there's some rationalizationing happening here. But like I said, the pick that they used to take Austin Booker was their own 5th-round pick that they had originally had that they traded to get Ryan Bates, and so what they traded to get that 5th back was a 2025 4. So if you really think about it, what they actually did was trade a 2025 4th-round pick for Ryan Bates, which I think is a perfectly fine trade for a guy that you see potentially as a starting center or even just as a very good reserve interior offensive lineman. A future 4 is a fine use for that. And then, mentally, if I tell myself they used a 5th-round pick this year on the punter and a 4th-round pick on Austin Booker, it all falls neatly into place for me. And yes, he's a massive upgrade at punter immediately over Trenton Gill. The only concern I have here, Travis, I don't know if you share this at all. Do you think there's any possibility that Matt Eberflus may actually be a little more conservative now on third down, knowing that he has Taylor and that he'll have that mentality of, well, we'll just pin him back. We'll just pin him back and then our defense can score.
It's extremely possible, I think, because that's the mindset you get into with this guy is you're like, well, like, even though it's like 3rd and 7 from my own 45 or something, and you're like, you know what? I can run a slant, and if we get there, that's great. We have DJ Moore. If we don't, if he gets tackled short, that's all right, because guess what? Torrey's going to put him in their own 5. And then, you know, suddenly they're in this awful position. We're probably either going to get the ball right back here because their punter is going to be, you know, having a short punt. We're probably going to have the ball advanced here in 3 plays, right? We're going to get the ball, and it's going to be over the 50. Best case scenario, we're going to end up with a safety or something like that. That's certainly how Iowa always played. Iowa would get to the 50. They would play very conservative. They would pin the other team back, and then they would, yeah, they would either try to score with their defense or get the ball back with even better field position with Cooper DeJean returning a punt. I don't know if that's what Shane Waldron is going to do, and I think Waldron is going to be more active in that. But there's a very real risk of that. But if that happens, it's because everybody is like, holy shit, our punter can do whatever he wants, and like, this isn't a bad idea. Like, if the other team is going to be down inside their own five, maybe we have more of an opportunity now. You know, at that point, you think, like, shit, this is plus punting. This is literally what Kirk Ferentz said in that famous press conference where he said punting is winning. He explained this whole thing, right? He was like, look, if you win field position this hard, if you nail them down inside their own five every time, you win the game. That's just how football works. And he's boarded out. He's boarded out for years.
I just hope that's not what happens with Eberflus. I would be sad about that. But yeah, I mean, it's ultimately Jason Kirk, a guy from used to write for SB Nation. I don't know if he still does, but he was like, I've seen a lot of people say the Bears drafted a punter in the fourth round. Like, no, son, they drafted the punter in the fourth round. And someone replied to that and was like, yeah, you can tell it, who doesn't watch Big Ten football, because everyone in the Big Ten orbit was like, that's a good pick. And everyone else was like, a punter in the fourth round?
Yeah. Everybody who has been victim to Torrey Taylor is like, yeah, see now that right there. And the Bears at the time, they didn't have another pick. And I could see Poles looking at his roster and being like, okay, let's just take Austin Booker. Do I want a project defensive end who might be nothing? Or do I want literally the best punter I've ever seen in my life? And you're like, fuck it. You know what? We're taking
I think it's funny that Poles literally said that too. Like, they were talking about Torrey, and he's like, maybe the best punter I've ever seen. How often does a GM, GMs like to hype their own guys that they draft, but you usually don't see a GM literally go so far as to say, like, this guy, the best one of these I've ever seen. And he literally said that about Torrey Taylor. He's like, he's the best punter I've ever seen, man. So yeah, that'll be.
Yeah, Iowa has another Australian punter in the pipes, by the way. They're just going to keep doing this. But yeah. I mean, I fucking love Torrey Taylor, but I don't think it's going to take very long for Bears fans to catch on and start cheering when the punter comes onto the field. because I have seen this team. I have seen Bears fans rally around kickers before, because that's just the type of goddamn people we are and what we've been through. It's not going to take too many Torrey Taylor punts, I don't think, for people to be like, holy shit, this guy is insane. So I look forward to that. I look forward to still being able to cheer for
one last pick to talk about. And it was the guy that a lot of people were the most mad about not getting with the Torrey Taylor pick. But yeah, the Bears took Austin Booker in the fifth round. Travis, I don't think you had spent a lot of time looking at him before that pick. Have you taken a closer look since then? Yeah. Like, how are you feeling about that pick right now? Because I was immediately fine with that. I think as far as project edges go in this draft, he is the most interesting one to me. I think the speed is real. I think the length is real. He's even got a little bit of technique. I think he fell more just because of the lack of multiple years of production. And I think he fell more because of concerns that he's maybe a little bit too light. Not so much because people really have questions about his ability to be a pass rusher. But we said, you know, this is a guy, what they really, I mean, they have DeMarcus Walker, who is an okay starting defensive end opposite of Montez Sweat, especially if Jervin Dexter does take a step up in year two like you're hoping, and you have Andrew Billings. What you needed was in those true passing situations, in those third and longs, you needed a speed rusher opposite Sweat who can really get home. And I don't know if he's ready to be that week one, but Booker is a guy that I can really see by the end of the season just being, you know, you're not bringing him, you're not starting him, but you're bringing him in those situations where all he's got to do is pin his ears back and get after the quarterback. And I think he can be really useful in that by the end of the season.
Yeah, I don't have a ton to say on Booker. I think he's a tools goof. Yeah. Like you said, thank you, Nick, for that, that term. He is a bet on raw talent, which I think you and I both agree. If you're gonna pick somebody in the fifth round, the fourth round, bet on raw talent, right? Like, bet on the guy who has the upside, because otherwise you're just taking a guy who's like, maybe could hang on in the league as like a, a rotational defensive end. Is do you want that? You don't really want that. So, yeah, I think it's a good idea to take one of these guys who might work out. The thing is, you know, we've seen that before. Dom Robinson sucked ass. I do, to your point, I think he has more polish than Dom Robinson. Dom really wasn't a defensive end when we took him, or it had barely been defensive end. Booker certainly has more experience, but it's the same thing. It's a lot of talent and it's a lot of upside, but there's not a lot there right now. I would expect this is more of a Zach Pickens choice than it is a Jervon Dexter choice. Not in that I think that's how their seasons will turn out, but in that this is really like looking at a guy and saying, man, I think we can make something out of that guy, but it's going to take a while. Like, you know, we need a year, we need 2 years, but I think we can turn this into something because he has such raw talent.
Well, and he was,
so yeah, I mean, I'm interested in seeing where it goes. I don't know. I honestly don't think we're going to see him that much this year. Like you said, if it's going to happen, it's going to be later in the season, but it's going to be a lot more like the Zach Pickens.
Well, I mean, so I think just to compare him, so Dom Robinson played in the MAC and he only had 4 sacks and he had a 67 PFF pass rush grade his last year, a 69.7 PFF pass rush grade his last year in college. Austin Booker played in a Power 5 conference. I know you don't think the world of the Big 12. I get that. But he played in a Power 5 conference. He played against actual schools. He was in, I believe his pass rush grade, true pass rush grade was like 82. His pass rush win rate was respectable. He's a lot. He had 9 sacks versus 4 in Dom Rob's last final college. He's a much farther along already. The tools, in my opinion, are much better. And so if you look at guys who entered the draft and had at least 200 pass rushes, this pass rush snaps this season, Pro Football Focus uses a stat that they just call pass rush productivity, which factors in sacks, hits, hurries, pass rush win rate, et cetera, just to kind of, this is their overall pass rush production metric. Austin Booker had the exact same pass rush productivity as Adisa Isaac. He was actually a little bit ahead of Jalix Hunt. He was ahead of Darius Robinson. He was ahead of Braylon Trice. The Falcons, they sniped us. I was this close to D.E. Trice, real name. He was ahead of Jonah Ellis, some other guys that got a lot of attention. He was ahead of Marshawn Nealon, quite a bit ahead of Marshawn Nealon, actually. So he's already more productive than a lot of these guys. He really isn't that far. So his score was 10.5 in this metric. Adisa Isaac was 10.5. Dallas Turner was only an 11.6, so he's not that far behind. Jared Verse was an 11.7. The highest guy in the draft class in this stat was Leatu Latu at 13.3. So, I mean, he is, I wonder if I can find, what did that look like for Dom Robinson? I bet it was low. He's much farther along, and that's why I am, and the tools are better. That speed rush is real. I do think,
yeah. The one thing he's got going for him is that speed rush. That right there will translate.
You know, even early on, if it's 3rd and 9 and you can rush him out there, I think he absolutely can contribute there. So, yeah, I don't know.
Oh, sick music.
Trying to call me. Yeah.
Hit the tunes. But yeah, I mean, again, we stated this last year, but we haven't stated it this year. We have a firm belief that players aren't real if they're taken 5th round or later until they actually do something for the team. So
we do be
like, Austin, welcome to the team. We hope you're good in the future, but I ain't going to say shit about you until you actually get on the field and do something.
So let's go. So, hold on, I'm going to just to find this real quick. I don't even know if he was. Well, there were a lot of edge rushers in the 2022 draft. If I just go by name, where was he at? I'm just trying to compare, just in terms of the extent of the project here. Yeah, 6.9 was what Dominic Robinson had in that match. And that was at Miami of Ohio, not Kansas. Gotcha. So considerably more. Right. Like, I understand the comp to Dom Rob. And that, yes, project defensive end in the fifth round. But I think there is, you're not just wish casting to say, like, I feel like Austin Booker has a better chance than Dominic, because he does. He's much more refined already. I think the tools are better. Yeah. So, excited about Booker.
There you go. And
like you said, though, we're not going to count a fifth round egg until it's hatched. That's for sure. But yeah, that's the 2024 Bears draft class. Obviously, the big two at the top are going to dominate all of the discussion. But yeah, we're excited about this group. It's an exciting time to be a Bears fan. Travis, next week, what are we doing? We want to are we going to look at like roster where it's at?
Oh, we're getting into the off season. What do you think?
There's a couple options. We could talk about the roster, like what it currently looks like, what they still need. Or we could do a one last draft episode and just kind of talk about, you know, what other teams. Last year we did an NFC North specific draft, specifically because the Lions draft class was so funky. I don't think we need to do that this year. I didn't really walk away from this draft thinking that any of the NFC North teams really did anything wild. Like we, I mean, other than the Vikings, as we talked about in our draft recap, giving up a whole lot of points draft trade wise.
Yeah, but the players everybody got seem pretty good, pretty normal.
We can talk about just some draft stuff around the NFL. We could be like, what are these guys doing? Or we could see if our buddy Eric is ready to start talking about this year's tournament. What do you think we should try to do next?
Ooh, we're gonna see. We're gonna have to have discussions off the podcast. We got to set a schedule, Kyle. We are in the off season now. The draft is done. And now we have to think about what we're going to do. But it's a mystery. Let's leave it a mystery for the folks. What are you getting next week? Who knows?
All right. Well, that's that for that. Fucking go Bears. We are on that bumper's road. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago. I sure do hate to go.